This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. 6 days before the 2024 presidential election, and of course in Louisiana, we have many other elections in Baton Rouge, a mayor's race that is highly contested, and tomorrow Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome will be on our program. Our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge, and your number is 877-217-5757, and this is the last day of the fall drive. So we ask for your support for public radio in this area, news programming you will find nowhere else. And today, in the final day, we're doing a Jed's Local Tailgate Catering Package valued at $500. Donate any amount and be entered. However, no donation is required. The package can be customized with all kinds of things, including boudin balls, remoulade, crawfish, and spinach chips with chips or shrimp po' boys. And all you have to do is go to www.wrkf.org/rules. That's wrkf.org/rules. 855-893-9753 is the number for contributions to WRKF, and we appreciate those. And without your support, we don't know public radio as we've enjoyed it the last 44 and a half years on this station. That's 855-893-9753, and you can go to wrkf.org. And we thank Dottie Vaughn from Plaquemine, who just gave, as well as Gregory Engelsman of Baton Rouge. Thank you for your contributions. Again, 855-893-9753, and if you like this hour of programming, we appreciate your contributions. We're joined now by two gentlemen who were with us a few weeks ago, Jim Kitchens and Bishop George. They are pollsters of renown. Bishop is in Shreveport. He is the founder of Vantage Data House, and Jim Kitchens is a legendary pollster. He's been around for over 40 years. In 1983, he founded the Kitchens Group, one of the top consulting firms in the country. He's been a strategist for 50 members of Congress, and also includes in his client list Governor John Bel Edwards. He has written also about his profession in The Four Pillars of Politics, Why Some Candidates Don't Win and Others Can't Lead. But he is here to talk about his groundbreaking research, along with Bishop George. They were on this program a few weeks ago, and they're doing polling in a different way, and they're doing it every night, a rolling average of three nights now is combined into one, and their numbers show right now that Kamala Harris, if the election were this moment, and we remind you that polls are only a snapshot, but their numbers show that she, at this point, has a lead, and a very substantial lead, and that is in variance to what we're reading and hearing and seeing in other parts of the country from other pollsters. And to give you an example, in Michigan, which is considered to be even Steven, Kitchens and Bishop George, they have it a close race as well. And test ballot for U.S. president, they have Donald Trump actually leading in Michigan, barely, 48.96 to 48.55. But then in other states where Trump is leading by bigger margins, Harris is leading in their survey. Kamala Harris in North Carolina in their survey is ahead 50.4 to 46.6. And in Georgia, the vice president is leading the former president by a comfortable margin, if there is a comfortable margin in any of these swing states. The test ballot shows Harris at 50.73 and Trump at 47.0. So if they are right, they will be on the cutting edge of, shall we say, polling evolution. And let's start there. Jim, we had you a few weeks ago. Your numbers have been very consistent, but the numbers in other polls have shown Trump gaining incrementally, very, very small gains, but still enough gains that he's now a solid favorite to win the race. Why are your numbers substantially different?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I was looking this morning into some publicly released polls, and they tend to do samples that are 50-50 male-female. And that's not what the electorate's going to look like, or historically is not what it's going to look like. I try to be careful not to try to be a fortune teller, but be an analyst here. But like in North Carolina, you've got 55% traditionally are women. And right now, the other thing in North Carolina, which I don't know if the other pollsters are taking effect. The governor's race, the Republicans have a disaster in the governor's race. Their gubernatorial candidate has become very controversial, and he's losing by 20 points. And it's hard to fathom that their governor could go down by 20 and it not have some incremental impact on the top of the ticket with Donald Trump. In Georgia, 56% of the voters are women, historically. In Pennsylvania, 52, and Nevada, 53, and Arizona, 53, and then Michigan, 55. So when you're seeing dead even races, you got to say, well, yes, but there is everywhere we look and we analyze the data by gender, there's a gender gap, which is at least a point, 2 points for her at a minimum, for Vice President Harris at a minimum. So when you start calculating in the impact of not having a 50-50 turnout male-female, which I think is more important now almost than party because it's where the race is breaking, that gives her an edge.
Well, if, as stated, and Pearson Cross echoed this yesterday, the political scientist from UL Monroe, that if you're right, you're going to be world famous because your numbers are showing something different. And we're talking about a couple of percentage points here. But as you know, with this race in those seven states, a couple of percentage points is huge. But the big outlier for you is Florida, where you live and you know the terrain better than anybody in your home state. And right now, as of this moment, Kitchens and George have Kamala Harris in Florida at 48.8 and Donald Trump at 48.0. So if as I stated a couple of weeks ago, if Harris gets the 30 electoral votes in Florida, it's game, set, match. She is the president. Right. Is Florida really in play?
I think it's in play. It's a very difficult thing for Harris. The Harris campaign, I talked to somebody in Washington a few days ago. Florida is such an expensive state with its huge media markets and its huge population. So they haven't really committed the resources down here. Donald Trump didn't think he needed to. And what has happened is over the last 4 years, the Republican Party has done a really good job of registering Republicans in the state of Florida. And they now have a million vote lead in registration. And you would think that would make that as an easy play for them. The problem they have in Florida is there's also a constitutional amendment on the ballot to remove the 6-week abortion ban and go back to the 24-week that was in before the last legislative session. And that is driving women voters. That is driving a lot of attitude. We also have legalization of marijuana, recreational marijuana. We have medical marijuana, and that seems to be driving younger voters, which tend to be Harris voters. So yeah, I think it is in play. Whether she can take it, I don't know. But if she just finishes close, she's going to flip a lot of state house seats and legislative districts to the Democrats. And Rick Scott, our U.S. Senator, is in big trouble against a woman candidate who is still not 100% well-known like you would expect at this point, although she's gotten more. She's been on television. And she's been on television, and quite frankly, I don't know where Rick Scott is. He may be running television in South Florida, but in Central Florida, which is considered the swing area of the state down, they call the I-4 corridor between Daytona Beach and Tampa, hadn't seen a lot of Scott. You don't see any yard signs. You don't no door-to-door kind of operation he has. So, you know, that could be another real surprise of the race if she can hold it close. But I think definitely it's going to be close. I think it's, you know, I don't know that they got the resources to put it into real play. I mean, I just think the registration advantage is hard to overcome. And I mean, I think, you know, it's a toss up right now, but you've got to give the edge to Trump. But I definitely think it's in play, and it's going to have some negative effects on the Republicans in the legislature.
Well, Bishop George in Shreveport, who has stated a few weeks ago, graduate of the Virginia Military Institute and the Digital Media Institute, he is an acknowledged authority on digital operations, and that's where the action is now in so many forms of media, including polling. And Bishop, you're confident your mousetrap is exceptional. And you do, as Jim stated a few weeks ago, you did a test run last year in Louisiana, and it went very well. What happened a year ago when you tried out this new form of polling?
Yeah, so we were involved in over 30 different races, and actually we were 97% accurate. So we called 29 out of 30 races accurately, including Jeff Landry's outright win, down to the local Lafayette Mayor President race for Monique Boulay, who no one thought was going to win. I think what really sets us apart is just our sample sizes. So all the average, polls that you're seeing in the swing states right now or on typical races are around 600 samples. Currently, we have 120,000 respondents within these swing states. And in Louisiana, we had around 15,000 respondents in the state to predict these races as well.
And in Louisiana right now, Kitchens and George have it 49-45 Trump. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, another segment with two exceptional pollsters, a young man in a hurry and a guy you'll hear from for many years, Bishop George, and one you've heard from for 40 years, Jim Kitchens. They are all but predicting Kamala Harris will be the next president. The election's in 6 days. Right now in Las Vegas, for what it's worth, the odds have moved up for Trump. 64% is the betting odds for Trump to return to the White House. So we're talking about a couple of percentage points in these swing states, but that will make the difference as to who wins the presidency in 6 days. Please be brief in your remarks. Robin Dow and Renee Martin producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. And again, this is the last day of the fall member drive, and the number for us to get your contribution in fewer than 89.3 seconds is 855-893-9753. You can go to wrkf.org. And we thank Vicki Piku, who I know is a frequent listener. She often sends me very compelling emails about the show at talk@talklouisiana.org. Let's go to Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. Has your polling indicated any difference between, say, moderate and traditional Republicans and the evangelical MAGA crowd?
All right. What about the distinctions in the Republican Party? Are they varied as far as support for or against Donald Trump?
Not in most cases. In most cases, the Republicans are going home. That's a battle, I think, if Trump loses, that is a battle that will be fought within the Republican Party after the election. But right now, you always have 8 to 10% of the party guys go to the other side. One of the problems with trying to look at that is that some of the traditional Republicans have rearranged themselves as independents, and you're not sure how much of that is traditional Republican and not. But generally, both sides are jamming up over 90% among their partisans, and it's fallen to those people who don't identify with either party.
Jim in Denham Springs. Jim, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. One issue with polling these days is that, so I'm 60. I don't answer phone calls that don't have caller ID. They go to voicemail. You don't leave a voicemail. Your number gets blocked instantly. Young people, they're worse than me. We're really tired of the garbage. And then as far as online polling, there's a point, boy, you better come up with a way to make me feel that it's safe and not a scam.
All right. Well, we've talked about this a few weeks ago, that Jim is right, that there are fewer people responding to polls in the traditional way. But Jim Kitchens and Bishop George, you believe you have a way to actually get good numbers. Tell us why your mousetrap is different than some other pollsters. Bishop, you want to take that one?
Yeah, so first off, this is a sample, and all the samples are modeled. And so I think the best way to explain it is, through sculpting a ball of clay, right? The clay is the sample, and it's the pollster's job to make it look like something. And what we try to do is make it look like the likely electorate. Now, our statewide polling would be considered as traditional polling, but what's different from us is that we have a new methodology called authenticated predictive projection models, which we actually reutilize our statewide data and model down to very niche areas. And so we're able to have a better look at the electorate at the local level than traditional pollsters due to this comprehensive modeling algorithm that we created.
And Jim Kitchens, I've noted that your polls show Harris is the probable winner, but this has been a good week for Trump, even in your polling, because he has moved closer and he's actually ahead slightly in Michigan and in Arizona, and he's only behind by like 0.3% in Nevada, which means that if he wins those states, Harris, she'll have to do what has been expected all along. Especially if she loses Michigan, she's got to get North Carolina to make up
and
for
Georgia.
That.
And
So you believe she can do it, but the one thing that's consistent with Jim's polling and others is that they're very close in all respects.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see is most of the campaigns, or most of the public polls, are going to stop, and we're still doing around 300 a night in every state, looking at the most current 1,200, and we're going to go all the way through Thursday night. For example, we haven't seen, and it's hard to tell whether it's a real fallout or it's a media grabbing onto something, the rally in Madison Square Garden and the comment about Puerto Rico. There's a huge number of Puerto Rican votes in Pennsylvania, for example. And if you decide that out of the, I think 300,000 we were looking at, 300,000 to 400,000 Puerto Ricans who vote in Pennsylvania. If that insult changes 10,000 votes, it flips the state. But whether it does or not, I can't wait to see the next few days' numbers and see if that moves it, or if something else happens. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a snapshot of where we are at the moment and where the dynamics are.
Well, it appears there's a 90% chance Republicans will regain the U.S. Senate, and most are now predicting they will retain the House, albeit extremely narrow. But some believe if Harris does do what you anticipate and surges at the end and wins the election, that she could pull the House back to the Democrats. Is that fair, or is that pie in the sky?
Yeah, I think that's hard. I think that's very hard. The Senate's going to remain basically evenly split because this is another dynamic of the race that we're looking at. If you go into Nevada or Arizona, Carly Lake is losing. They have gotten people, all their Senate candidates are struggling even more than Donald Trump are. I mean, where you're, you know, it's almost like they are pulling him down instead of him pulling them up with coattails, particularly in North Carolina. That's a true case. But it's also a case somewhat in Florida where Rick Scott's favorability rating is more negative than positive. So the problem they've got, I can't see, you know, like West Virginia flipping back Democrat or anything like that. So I think it's going to be one of those places that's just going to sit evenly split. I think Bob Casey will win in Pennsylvania. A Democrat will win in Michigan.
Well, and if you say if Scott were to lose or Cruz were to lose, then it's it's potentially a case in which Democrats could hold on. But about Tester? A listener asked about Tester in Montana. Is he closing the gap or is it all over for him?
That we have not looked at Montana because we don't consider that one of the swing states.
No, it's not.
I would be surprised if it doesn't go Republican, though.
There you go.
I think it goes Republican.
All right. Well, right now, 6 days out, Jim and Bishop, if you're calling it, who wins?
Well, we're going to stick, I think, with our original base. Our bet on the table is that Kamala's going to win this thing.
With over 300 electoral votes?
Don't know about that, but it'd be close, yeah.
Bishop?
Yep, I think you're exactly right. Again, we're like Jim always says, we're not fortune tellers. What we can tell you is what is most likely to occur based off our data. And what is most likely to occur is a Kamala Harris victory at this snapshot in time.
What about the, and Kevin in North Baton Rouge, I think, was going to ask this, and we're short on time, but about the, this, some believe it's a myth, but others believe it's real, that more black males are going to vote for Donald Trump. Will that make a difference if it happens? Could that swing the election?
It could, but we don't see it happening. I mean, the African-American vote is solidly with her. You always see 3 to 5% to 8% maybe in some state African Americans voting Republican, but we're not seeing any unusual skew in the African American data that we have.
Well, you gentlemen are fascinating, and we'll be calling on you very soon. And if you're right, my God, everybody in the country is going to be calling Bishop George and Jim Kitchens. So, I mean, you're putting your necks on the line. Your reputations. Dick Morris never came back for predicting Romney would beat Obama. But he's dead in the water, except on Newsmax. But Kitchens and George are saying Harris will win, and we will talk with them soon. And we thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us again on short notice. I know both of you guys are extremely busy, but keep going. You're producing fascinating data. Bishop George and Jim Kitchens, Vantage Data House, back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Last day of the fall member drive, and we only do this twice a year on an extended basis, so we ask for your support at WRKF.org anytime, day or night, or you can call 855-893-9753. That's 855-893-9753. You're in and out in fewer than 89.3 seconds. You will have done your good deed. If you're an existing member, we can always appreciate a bit more, and if you haven't contributed either this year or in the past, we would appreciate you giving us a call right now, especially if you enjoy this hour of programming. Again, 855-893-9753, and we're doing a Jed's Local Tailgate Catering Package, drawing valued at $500. Donate any amount and be entered. No donation is required. The package can be customized. You can choose boudin balls, shrimp remoulade, crawfish, and spinach dip with chips or shrimp po' boys. So go to WRKF.org/rules. We need 10 donations to stay on track, and we're about halfway there. So we've got some work to do in the final half hour of this program. Your number for us is 877-217-5757. And it was 50 years ago tonight that one of the great fights in the history of the heavyweight division took place in Kinshasa, Zaire, Africa. Muhammad Ali, 32 years old, considered way past his prime. He had fought two fights against Ken Norton and two against Joe Frazier, and then split them both, 1-1, and all four went the distance at that point. And he was fighting George Foreman, the heavyweight champ of the world, a solid favorite, about a 5-1 favorite. Foreman had knocked out both Kenny Norton and Joe Frazier in two rounds. So Foreman was the big favorite. He was 25, right in his prime, considered invincible, one of the hardest hitters in the history of the pugilistic game. And the great documentary, When We Were Kings, followed the trail in Zaire as Muhammad Ali defied the odds on this night with an 8th-round knockout of George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle.
I've done something new for this fight. I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean I make medicine sick. Too fast! You're too fast!
The king is going home to get his throne.
Yeah, when I get to Africa, we're gonna get it on because we don't get alone.
So we try to get the champions of the sports world, champions of the music world.
You know, it was handsome, it was articulate, it was funny, it was whooping ass too.
George Foreman was a phenomenon.
The big bad monster, and no one can whoop him.
We're gonna fly in the air till we get to Zaire.
This chump has got everybody scared.
They thought he would take one of the world's worst beatings ever, and he wouldn't give up.
Scared of what?
In a time of courage in the jungles of Zaire.
I like to tell the children of the world, quit eating so much candy. We must whoop Mr. Tooth Decay. I got one right here, one right here.
A man named Muhammad created his own destiny.
That means kill him.
This is his moment of truth.
Kids today will be missing a whole lot. They don't know about the legacy.
All right, that's Muhammad Ali and the documentary, A Great One, When We Were Kings. But Foreman punched himself out. Ali went to the ropes, took his chances on potentially being knocked out, but he took what Foreman had to give. And George Foreman at that time hated the guy, wanted him, as you're about to hear, wanted not only to beat him but to finish him off permanently. Here's George Foreman.
So hard one time, right about the neck, and I heard him say, and I've never forgotten that. He was trying to win a boxing match. Mm-hmm. I was trying to kill that guy. And that broke my heart once I found religion. I fell in love with him later on. We became phone talkers. He became my most beloved friend ever. And I miss him to this day because that was the gift of boxing, Muhammad Ali and our friendship. That was my gift. But Muhammad was that guy, oh my gracious. I really fell in love with him.
Right.
Because he always had something to say, even when he couldn't speak anymore. Once I called him up, I said, hey, Muhammad, I want a rematch. He said, you crazy. I said, so how's your wife? She crazy.
George Foreman, who ultimately came back in his 40s and regained the title. He's an amazing fighter, one of the greats of all time, and that was a golden age of the heavyweight division. And Ali beat them all, except Larry Holmes, his former sparring partner, and by then it was all over. Ali was 38 when he made another comeback, and it failed. But he beat Foreman. He beat Liston twice. He beat Frazier twice. He beat Norton twice. He beat Jerry Quarry. He beat Ernie Shavers. Every one of the great heavyweights he defeated in his time, except for Larry Holmes, and by then it was over. There's a shelf life for boxers, and Ali's went longer than anybody else. And his last victory in the ring was September 15th, 1978. He beat Leon Spinks at the Superdome in New Orleans to win the title a third time, and he was 36 years old then, and he should have retired, but he didn't. The money, the power, the fame, it was too much, and he got a big payday in Las Vegas, went 10 rounds with Larry Holmes, and lost all 10 rounds to his former sparring partner. But he left a legacy that is immense, and he is probably the greatest heavyweight of all time. Born Cassius Clay, January 17th, 1942, Louisville, Kentucky. He died the 3rd of June, 2016, when he was 74 years old, and he had an amazing life. And perhaps at the time of his life, at his peak, he was the most famous person on the planet. And it was 50 years ago tonight that he scored his greatest upset over George Foreman. 877-217-5757 is your number. And a reminder that we're 20 minutes from the finish line. We'd like to hear from you at 855-893-8753 and receive your contribution to the well-being of public radio in South Central Louisiana. And we're joined now by a remarkable person, a person of many talents, some which our listeners who may know her and probably do from her great career through a generation or two. Stephanie Powers is with us, and she has a number of things on her menu right now, including a great honor involving the William Holden Wildlife Foundation, of which she has been intricately involved. And she is joining us from the West Coast, where it is 7:40 in the morning in the Los Angeles area. And good morning, Stephanie. It's nice to hear your voice.
Good morning. Yes, I'm always up early because I have four dogs, and they're they're very busy early in the morning.
Well, I mentioned that many people, they know you. It's been a few years, 45 since Heart to Heart, which was an amazing show and an overwhelming favorite. And in those days, there were fewer options on network television. Started with Robert Wagner from 79 to 84. But how many languages do you speak, Stephanie?
Well, I'm conversant in about six.
Six languages.
Yeah.
And you're a Hollywood person. Grew up
well, sort of. I'm a Hollywood person. I mean, I was born in Hollywood in the 1940s, and it was a very small town. People, you know, it was a sort of industry town. So everybody knew everybody. It was a place where you were likely to know people in the industry, in the entertainment business, and obviously in the motion picture industry, rather more than you were unlikely to know people. So it was when I was growing up, it was not unusual that we were all thrown together in with others that were growing up. In my ballet class, as a six-year-old, I was wound up with two young ladies who were also going to be married to Robert Wagner. They were married in real life to Robert Wagner. I was married to him on television. And it was a dance class with Natalie Wood, Jill St. John, and myself.
You were all in the same dance class. That's what a story.
A tad older than me, but we were all in the same ballet class.
And you went to Hollywood High, which is a world famous. The Sheiks on Sunset Boulevard.
The Sheiks.
I'm told that one of your classmates was Nancy Sinatra. Is that correct?
No, Nancy is a little...
I know she's older, Nancy. But you graduated when you were young, didn't you?
Yes and no. All right, so all these wonderful facts get a little bit diluted. No, I was not in school with Nancy. I was in school with Linda Evans.
Okay.
Yvette Mimeo, but not Nancy. And I graduated a little bit early because I was inducted in the education system a little bit earlier than in those days. That was that frequently happened, where if your birthday came at the
end
last
of the year.
Part of the year, yes, as mine does, you sometimes were ahead of your age group.
Yeah, no, we do have the most enlightened audience in radio, and I've been told by somebody who grew up in Los Angeles that Nancy, these boots are made for walking, graduated from University High, another famous school in Los Angeles.
There you go.
But you were Hollywood High. But Stephanie Powers, your career, I remember when I was a little younger, as were you, the girl from Uncle. That at the time was... on the network television, and shall we say you were a striking presence?
Well, that's very kind, yes. I was under contract when I was about 16 to Columbia Pictures, and in those days the studio system was in its waning years, but still active and still with the same philosophies about putting people under contract.
We're going to spend some more time with the great Stephanie Powers after this brief time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with the remarkable actress Stephanie Powers. Also, many may or may not know, an exceptional singer, a big star not only on the small screen, but the big screen and on stage. She's been around since... the 1970s, 45 years since Heart to Heart, and she had already been an established actress before then. The number for a contribution, which we would like in our last day of the fall member drive, if you're so inclined, is 855-893-9753. But Stephanie Powers is truly one of a kind and has had a life of great variants as far as her passions, and one of them is the wildlife, and she has been intricately involved during the life of William Holden and after his death with the William Holden Wildlife Foundation, and that continues. And William Holden
I'm actually the founder and president.
But there you go.
So when Bill was when he was one of the biggest movie stars in the world, he and two friends went out to Kenya in the mid-1950s, when the freedom fighters were all over the mountains and nobody was going out there to, in those days, hunt. He and his friends wound up buying a hotel and creating the Mount Kenya Safari Club, which became a real jewel in the crown and destination for travelers in those days. And eventually he, I mean, very shortly actually, after they purchased that and created this wonderful club, he bought the 2,000 acres surrounding the club and created the very first game ranch for the preservation of species that occurred in the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. In fact, it might have been in the whole of Africa, because in 1959, nobody had the word conservation in their vocabulary. So he was a visionary on that level, and I grew up with passion about animals and responsibility for animals, and when I was in my 20s, I rescued a bear, a Malaysian sun bear, from a pet shop in West Hollywood. Can you imagine?
A bear.
Illegally traded, and it opened the world of wildlife protection and mm-hmm. conservation to me. So we had a great many things in common. And his efforts in with the game ranch in Kenya wound up preserving and caring for 35 species of East African wildlife, five of which are no longer visible in the wild. And after his death, one of the things that he wanted to do was to build an education center so local young people, local children as well as adults, could learn about the reasons for conservation and ultimately learn about biodiversity. So in his memory, I created the William Holden Wildlife Foundation for the purpose of creating a public charity that would last long after I was gone, and to teach wildlife conservation and biodiversity as a means of preserving and protecting our precious world heritage wildlife that is located in East Africa. As well as that aspect of preservation, it became very understandable that we should also include in our mission statement the habitat, because if there's no habitat for wildlife, then there's never going to be any purpose to trying to preserve it. So we have a mission statement that says wildlife conservation through education and alternatives to habitat destruction.
Well, the
we have seven projects that are ongoing, teaching this companion form of regenerative agriculture and permaculture mm-hmm. agriculture, soil regeneration, as a means of capturing carbon as well as sequestering moisture for mostly local farmers, not factory farmers, but who need to have their agriculture turned around in one growing season. So,
all right. Well,
it's a very important project for us.
I do want to note that we're hearing the voice of Stephanie Powers, and Vision for the Future is highlighting the careers of 25 individuals in the world, including Stephanie, with the 2024 Agents Change Award. And this involves Global Partnerships Forum and the United Nations. And it is a distinct honor and one that is well-deserved, because William Holden, I remember seeing him on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson many times, and he would talk about this passion he had for wildlife. And you've kept the flame alive. You had the same passion. And I can understand how the two of you were kindred souls. And has there ever been a finer actor? He was pretty special, wasn't he?
Well, I'm a bit prejudiced about that, but yes, I think so.
And he goes back to Golden Boy and Sunset Boulevard. But what a career that man had! And he and today I'm older than he was when he died. He was only 63 years old. It is tragic that he passed so young.
Yes, I think he would really have enjoyed what we're doing now, and I'm sure he gets a big kick out of it if he's sitting somewhere overseeing our operation in his name. That about a million students who have already passed through our doors since we opened our education center in 1982. We service about 11,000 students a year, and we have an outreach program that services another close to 6,000 populations of all ages in rural areas. And now people refer to our operation in Kenya as the William Holden. They don't refer to him as a movie star. And I, knowing Bill's sense of humor, he would have really enjoyed that.
Well, I mentioned you've been on the stage, on the big screen and the small screen, and you've been a dancer, a singer, and an actress, a varied career. And I got the impression, if you were faking it, you were doing it really good. You really liked what you did a lot and what you continue to do.
I do, yes. Yes, I do.
What was it about Heart to Heart that was magic for the viewers and certainly was a great thing for your career?
Yes, it was, because anything that runs, you know, we did the weekly show for 5 years, and then there was a hiatus for Heart to Heart because we were canceled off network television by ABC. And a few years later, we were invited to come back to network television by NBC, and we did 8 2-hour movies, which put a nice period at the end of the sentence for us. And in the meantime, we had both done other work, and also we used to tour in a play called Love Letters.
Mm-hmm.
And we played, we opened it in London. We played in Canada and all over the United States. I think we did over about 500 performances.
Well, listener Helen Monroe notes that William Holden correctly did a movie in Baton Rouge called Alvarez Kelly, and that Stephanie Powers in The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. was the first hour-long series featuring a female in a leading role. I did not know
that. Right.
Well, listen,
I didn't either. And at the time, nobody made anything of it. And it was only about a few years ago when somebody called me and said, look, we're doing, PBS is going to be honoring pioneers of television, and we'd like to invite you to join us. And I said, well, I'm hardly a pioneer. And they said, oh, no.
Yes, you are. You
know, Girl from U.N.C.L.E. was the first. Well, I really didn't realize that. And interestingly enough, if you consider the changes in society and the changes in the way we publicize things on in films and television, it would have been a huge, a monumental occasion. But it certainly went by without really ever being heralded as this groundbreaking moment.
Well, thank you, Stephanie, and congrats on keeping the flame of William Holden alive, your flame as well, with the Holden Wildlife Foundation. And we love the fact that you're still in the game. You're an amazing force of nature.
Well, thank Keep you going. Very much for allowing me to talk about it a bit and to reach your audience, which is, you know, a new area for me to expose our mission to people who might be interested.
And you can go to the William Holden Wildlife Foundation and find out more about what Stephanie and her people do. They're doing important work. And you've inspired us to keep going.
Well, thank you.
See.
Thank you very much.
Take care. And joining us early in Los Angeles, California, is Stephanie Powers. And again, we're heading to the finish line, only about 30 seconds to go before we call it a day, but we would like for your contribution to WRKF, if possible, at 855-893-9753 or WRKF.org. Thanks to Charles Forbes and to my friend Elizabeth Dent Sumrall. She says she gives every year. God bless you, Elizabeth. We love you, and that she loves Heart to Heart. John Weston Newroads, a member, says Stephanie Powers was his favorite of all time. So she joined us here today. Thanks for your contributions. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.